And welcome to Minute 145 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Stephen J. Rubin, a filmmaker, a film historian, a podcaster, and an author. Welcome back to the show, Steve.
Hey, Rob. Good to see you. Good to hear you. Good to be here.
I've been eagerly awaiting for the last 24 hours to find out what's going to happen to Mellish, you know, as he's got the upper hand finally in the middle of this little fight with this German SS guy. So minute 145 begins with Mellish continuing with the scuffle and ends with it's all over for Mellish. Spoiler for anybody who doesn't know what happens in this minute.
Yeah, this is not, if you don't want spoilers, you shouldn't be watching this show or listening to this show.
That's right. That is very true.
We spoil the spoilers.
Correct. Why not? I look at it from the perspective that if a movie is 27 years old and you're listening to a podcast about it and you haven't seen the movie yet, you should stop listening right now. Go watch the movie, and in 2 hours and 49 minutes, come back and listen again.
Exactly.
That's what I think.
I would probably say the majority of people who are listening have seen this movie not only once, but several times.
Probably. I did have one or two guests that had never seen it before. I was able to get them to finally watch it, which I'm very happy because, like, when I did Die Hard, I had a guest who refused to watch the movie. He just watched the 5 minutes and, you know, just discussed everything completely out of context. It was interesting. Definitely.
That's another one of my favorites, by the way.
So you can go back and listen to that season too, if you want.
Yeah, sure. How many of these have you done?
This is my eighth season. So I did The Great Escape. Then I did Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Then I did Die Hard. Then I did When Harry Met Sally. Then I did Die Hard 2. Then I did It's a Wonderful Life. Then I did Die Hard 3. And now I'm doing Saving Private Ryan.
Ah, very good. Well, when you get to Die Hard 4, that's my favorite Die Hard movie after the first one.
Really? Interesting. Most people don't agree on that topic, but... very interesting to know that someone does rank Die Hard 4 on the top. See, I look at Die Hard as a trilogy. I mean, four is much better than 5. You know, five is
horrible. Five is unwatchable. Listen, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one.
That's correct. And again, if everyone always agreed, then we wouldn't have interesting conversation. You know.
So true.
Yeah, but again, I am a big fan of Die Hard 4, and it is going to be something I will do on the horizon. But I'm probably going to be doing it slightly different. But we'll get there. I will inform people when it's needed about that.
Got it.
So I love the opening shot of this minute because we finally see that Henderson is dead. In the middle of this scuffle, we just get a shot of the corpse of Henderson, who up until now has been struggling, and now he's just not struggling anymore, and that's it. And we see a pool of blood all around of him, where all the blood seeped out of his jugular from where he was shot. One of the discussions that I've had throughout the course of the scenes in Rommel is we never know how many Allied troops there really are there. What I decided to do was I'm going to be counting the Allied deaths in order to give us more of an idea as to how many Allied troops there are. So we now will have to add another one, Henderson, to the list. So we are.
And how many Allied troops did you figure?
Well, right now we got 13. Henderson is the 13th.
13th casualty?
13th casualty, correct. Okay. In the Battle of Rommel. Again, we still have another, 2 weeks of the Battle of Rommel. So we'll have to see how many more will add will how high that figure will go. Because again, they never tell us, and most of the characters that are here don't have names. You know, Henderson is one of the few. There's three that we know their names. We know Henderson, we know Parker, and Parker died last week, you know, with Jackson, and then we have Toynbee, you know, the demolitions guy. Those are the three that we know their names. The rest of them are just completely nameless stuntmen, I guess. You know,
right. I think they're referred to as ND. ND infantrymen, whatever. Yeah.
Right. Could be. Red shirts, basically.
Red shirts, exactly.
What else? You know, at least, you know, in Star Trek, they found a way to classify them. You know, here they're all wearing the same colored stuff. So, yeah. So in the foreground, we see Henderson's body. And in the background, we see Mellish fighting with the German. And then Mellish pulls out a knife from his jacket. And so I had a conversation about this back in, I think it was episode 27 or 26. My guest at the time was wondering if the knife that he pulls here is the knife that he got off of it, where, remember, he took the Hitler youth knife.
Yeah, that Vin Diesel gave him.
That's right, that he was now going to use as a Shabbos collar cutter. what did you think? Do you think this is the same knife? Or do you think it's meant to be the same knife? Or is it just another knife?
You know, I don't remember seeing the knife that Vin gives him. This looked like an official U.S. Army knife. So I'm not 100% sure what it is.
Okay, so it is not the same knife. It is, as you said, it's an official U.S. Army knife that he takes out. I guess the other knife is sitting in his bag somewhere. You know, something that he's going to take home. You know, along with Mike's little containers
little
of cans
of earth. Right, right, exactly. It's funny when I went to Joe Amadei, who was a mutual friend of ours, when he went to the
friend of the show, Joe Amadei.
Yeah, he went to the Great Escape locations, the actual locations in Germany where the camp was. He sent me a little pill container of hairy earth. Hairy, of course, being the name of the tunnel that was the main escape tunnel.
Yes. Yeah, do you think it really was hairy dirt? Or was it?
It was dirt from hairy. Whether it was original hairy dirt, not sure.
He could have just, you know, scraped up some dirt from his home in Pennsylvania and sent that to
him. No, Joe would not do that.
It's like, you know, a lot of times they say that you go places and you can buy holy water from specific places, and basically they just fill it up from the tap. You know, that type of thing. You never really know where it's coming from.
Well, all water is holy.
That is true. That's true. Right. So this knife that he pulls out is not the Hitler Youth knife.
Right.
So now I can give a definitive answer. You know, I gave a tentative answer back then that it wasn't. You know, back then Tierney wanted to know, and so now Tierney, now I can tell you for sure that it is not the same knife, because that would have been very poetic to have him actually get stabbed by that knife.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, the knife that Mellish pulls on the Nazi turns up, the Nazi turns it around on him and stabs him with his own knife. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
That's correct. By the way, when I had Adam Goldberg on the stage at the Arrow Theater talking about this before we ran the movie, he said that this whole sequence where he's about to be stabbed, he's actually standing up in a hole. His body is actually, he's not lying down prone. He's actually standing in some kind of set construction where he can keep his, you know, he's keeping his body straight. And obviously he's throwing his body back as he's getting stabbed, but he's not lying down when this happens.
Interesting. Well, that's very cool to know. And so the two of them continue their fight, and Mellish is you're trying to push the knife down on the guy, and the guy manages to flip them around and, you know, get the upper hand, so he's on top. And he
and there's this interesting moment there where actually Mellish says, whoa, wait, like what?
Right. Well, we're almost there.
We're almost there. Okay. But the whole idea, though, that Mellish could stop the battle for a second to take a little, just give me a break. Let me breathe here. It's just crazy.
Timeout. I want a timeout in the middle, you know, that type of thing. Right. But we see that the German is basically able to disarm Mellish at this point very easily. And then as he disarms him, the shot changes and we see Upham continue to walk up the stairs. And you pointed this out earlier in the week. We now get a shot of the top of the stairs and there is no dead body there.
Right.
So, you know, there is a continuity error here, I guess.
Somebody was shot, somebody bled out, somebody's body's missing.
That's right. And, you know, Upham then, you know, puts his hand on the gun, preparing himself to actually have to use it. But we see the anguish on his face that he's, you know, getting closer to have to go do something here. We get a shot of Mellish, and he's trying to hold the knife back, not very successfully. And we see the knife just get closer and closer to him. And then he like pushes it up and he screams and is able to push the hand up a little bit, but it's still not enough. And the German just starts speaking to him in German, which I don't know what he says. Steven Spielberg is notorious for not allowing foreign language to be translated in his movies in subtitles.
The impression I got, Rob, was that the German was telling him, don't fight it. Don't fight it. Just go to sleep.
Probably.
Go to sleep. Something like that.
Yeah, probably.
This Nazi, by the way, is doesn't seem like your typical fanatical Nazi. Seems like more of a human being, which is again credit to the performance and the direction. Mm-hmm.
And also we see the sweat coming off of him and the spittle and everything. I mean, you see that this guy is really in the midst of this fight, you know, as he's whispering to him. And Mellish realizes that things are not going well for him, and that's when, you know, he says the line that you start talking about. He goes, stop, don't. Let's stop. Listen to me. Stop. You know, trying to convince the guy that let's take a timeout.
Yeah, don't kill me. Don't do what you're trained to do. Just let me go. And obviously that's not going to work. Of course, if this movie was made in the 1940s, John Wayne would be behind them and he would take the German out just in time to save Mellish. But that doesn't happen in 1998's Saving Private Ryan.
Correct. And, you know, slowly we see that the knife comes down and, you know, he doesn't even do it quickly. He just slowly inserts it into Mellish's heart, more or less. And the German keeps whispering sweet nothings. I don't know what he's saying, really. And
go to sleep. Go to sleep.
More or less. Yeah, and Mellish is really just, you know, he's helpless here. As this knife is slowly, you know, pressed into him throughout the whole thing.
There are a number of agonizing moments in Saving Private Ryan, certainly one when the medic is killed, but I would say that Mellish's death is the most agonizing moment in the movie, just in terms of pure audience horror and helplessness.
Right, especially given the fact that this is a character we've got to know really well, and it's a very up-close and personal death shot.
Right.
But I'm like looking at the screen as how is he standing? in this scene. That's what I don't understand. Meaning that the camera is turned because they're standing up. Is that what you were saying, more or less?
I think that he's rocking back like he's still lying prone, but I just the way Adam described it, I think he is standing in some kind of hole. I don't know exactly know why they did it that way, but I guess the way it was shot was they needed to do it that way.
Maybe. Okay. Makes sense. Interesting. Yeah, and that's basically how this minute ends, as we see that Mellish is no longer with us. So once again, that adds another body to the body count that we're doing right now. So we're up to 14. 14 of the Allied troops, in the Battle of Rimmel have already lost their lives. And that's all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
I do not.
Okay. Is there anything you want to say in general about the movie that we haven't touched upon?
No, I think we should actually talk. One thing that we haven't talked about is the fact that in terms of minimalist music scores, this is probably John Williams' most minimalist movie scores. There's virtually no music in this movie. And then when you hear music, it is so low key and background. But it's very powerful when it is there. But
And it's
a
very
lot of
patriotic feel. It gives a very patriotic feel to it.
in a patriotic field, the whole Battle of Rommel is done without music. In prior World War II movies, there would be more music to score under the battle sequence. This was all sound effects and action. I think it's very powerful, very powerful.
The score of this movie is on my list of scores that I, can listen to anytime. And the suite, the Saving Private Ryan suite, is just great to listen to.
By the way, since you've already done the moment, what did you think? What did your host say about the fact that when we see the old man at the beginning of the movie, and then you morph into the face of Tom Hanks?
Well, you don't morph into the face of Tom Hanks. What they do is they make us believe that it's Tom Hanks because the scene immediately goes to Tom Hanks.
Right.
It only morphs at the end of the movie. So a number of my guests have had they didn't like it. I personally like it because I think it's a great fake out. Because the
Yeah.
first time you see this movie, you are led to believe that it is Tom Hanks that we're watching throughout the whole movie, and this way it gives you the false impression, but that Tom Hanks's character Miller is going to survive. So therefore, when Miller eventually doesn't survive, spoiler, you're shocked because you said, "Wait a second, he's the guy at the beginning. How's that possible?" So I personally like it. I like the way that they do it, but I do have guests that didn't like it.
Yeah, no,
What's
I'm sure.
your thoughts on it?
It didn't bother me.
Do you believe the do you remember if the first time you saw it, you believed the I guess the fake out that it
I
was
yeah, I, yeah,
Tom Hanks?
I was caught up. I thought that he would survive. That's true. The death of Hanks is a shock to me, as it was to everybody who I was with that night. No, it was a terrific fake out, and there's not a false moment in the whole movie for me, really. That's a hallmark of a great movie.
Okay, I agree. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, which is a segment where we will discuss. I guess we'll discuss their top five Steven Spielberg directed films. So Steve, once again, start with your number five and work your way up, please.
Well, that's when you get to the top of Spielberg's filmography, these are all terrific movies that would all have to be tied. So even though I'm mentioning them in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, to me they're all just 4-star, A plus, the best you can get movies. So I'd start with Jaws. That's my number five. And Jaws plays and plays and plays and plays. I've seen it probably 40 times and it still plays. My four is Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Again, a movie that I'm always watching, even though it has some crazy parts with Richard Dreyfuss going nuts. I enjoy the movie enormously. I've seen it many times. Number three for me would be Raiders of the Lost Ark. Just a pistol of a movie, from nonstop action to just a lot of fun. One of Harrison Ford's greatest roles. I mean, they've certainly mined that role enough. And unlike some people, I actually liked the last Indiana Jones movie, the one about the that
The
time travel.
Dial of Destiny.
The Dial of
I always say that I like the first 40 minutes of it.
Okay,
The
that
first
sounds like
40
me.
minutes, the first segment of the movie feels like a regular Indiana Jones part of the trilogy. And then after
Yeah.
that, it doesn't work as well because it deals with the Cold War and all that stuff.
Right. Number two would be Empire of the Sun, which I've mentioned earlier has been one of my favorite John Williams scores. Empire of the Sun is constantly discovering new things about it. It's just what's interesting about this World War II movie is it's a very unusual aspect of World War II. We've seen prisoner of war camps in Europe. We've never seen a civilian internment camp in China.
Correct.
And just again, this is Spielberg, the use of the P-51 Mustang attack on the Japanese airfield is done with such precision. I mean, it's the first time I think we see Mustangs ever in a World War II movie in that kind of situation. Of course, they come to Saving Private Ryan as well. And then my favorite Steven Spielberg movie, what a surprise, Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, I thought you were actually going to say the color purple. Yes.
Know, some of his titles, I 1941 is a favorite, but for very different reasons. I mean, it's a goofball movie, but I enjoy it. E.T.'s fun. E.T.'s a lot of fun, but I don't consider them in the same ranks as the ones I've mentioned.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, Steve, thank you very much for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun, very educational. I always learn a lot from you, especially from all your stories of all the people that you've met along the way and how they've enriched your knowledge of their careers, movies, everything. So I appreciate you taking the time to join us this week.
My pleasure, Rob, and I look forward to joining you again in the future. If anybody wants to reach me, they can I have two podcasts, which are fun, by the way. I've had some really fun guests talking about all aspects of movies. One of my favorite interviews was with Nicholas Meyer talking about all about the making of Time After Time, the great time
Wow.
travel movie. That was so much fun. I've had Jimmy Hunt talking about Invaders from Mars. I've had Billy Gray talking about The Day the Earth Stood Still. I've had just some really fun people on the show. That's Stephen J. Rubin, Saturday Night at the Movies. I also do with producers Arthur E. Friedman and Julian Schlossberg, Tales from Hollywoodland. Both of these podcasts are available on your local platform. One is Stephen J. Rubin's Saturday Night at the Movies. One is Tales from Hollywoodland, and they're both on YouTube as well. I have a Facebook page, Stephen J. Rubin. I have a X page, Stephen J. Rubin. I have a LinkedIn page, Stephen J. Rubin. And certainly, if you want to just chat, drop me an email, Steve, Steve, J. Rubin at gmail.com. That's J-A-Y Rubin at gmail.com.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Instagram, and you can find me on Twitter. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. So once again, thank you very much, Steve. And until Monday, earn this.
Earn this.
My solitude, you.